Pekutvach. Today is the 28th of Sivan, the day that the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin arrived in America, and a day that began a whole renaissance of Judaism in this country and throughout the world. And it's also a day that empowers us to break through new frontiers in spreading the Torah and its commandments to the world, because the word 28 in Hebrew is equal to the word for power, and the month of Sivan is the month when God gave us the Torah. So just like when Rebbe arrived in America, the power of this day is expressed, represented in Rebbe's arrival in America, when Judaism really began to take root in this country and spread. So I want to share, it's also this week when it's Gimel Tammuz, I wanted to share a few inspirations that I heard today in our Farbringen, through our amazing speakers, and yesterday I heard from a video of Michal Vashatsky sharing stories in Yiddish. I'll share them in English. Just a few inspirational ideas, no particular order, that hopefully will give us some good way to prepare for Gimel Tammuz, who's coming this coming Wednesday night and Thursday. Want to sit down, Rosie? Can I talk to you? All right. There was a tzaddik who called the Ribnitzer Rebbe. The Ribnitzer Rebbe was very close to many Chabad Chassidim. He had a nephew in Chernivitz, and because of his relationship with his nephew, who was a dentist, wasn't so religious, but he was someone that, for whatever reason, Ribnitzer Rebbe would visit, his nephew, and he would become, when he was in Chernivitz, he got to know a lot of Chabad Chassidim. Among the Chassidim that he got to know were the Vyshetskys. Rav Moshe Vyshetsky and his wife and their children lived in Chernivitz, and they would often be asked by the Ribnitzer Rebbe for assistance. For example, one of the customs of the Ribnitzer Rebbe was to fast all day. He would fast every day, all day, and he would pray pretty much all day. Shacharis to Mincha, and Mincha to Ma'ariv. He wouldn't pray with a minyan. I mean, no minyan would go that slow, but he would pray with such incredible concentration and devotion. He was very tall, very thin, and very energetic and enthusiastic, always like with smile and friendliness and warmth. And so what he wanted was not to have a minyan, but he wanted to have 10 people in the room when he would pray. That was what he called for himself his minyan. It says whenever there are 10 Jews together, there's a divine presence. So he wanted to have 10 Jews in the room when he would pray. So Mrs. Vyshetsky, unfortunately at that time, she was suffering from Yenamachla, from cancer. And she really needed a lot of divine assistance. So before her husband, Rav Moshe, went to shul to help the Ribnitzer Rebbe with his so-called minyan, he asked her, "Is there something you want me to ask the Ribnitzer Rebbe for a bracha for?" So she says, "No, I have a bracha from my Rebbe, from our Rebbe, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I don't need to ask a bracha from another Rebbe. I have a bracha from our Rebbe." Actually, this time the story took place, I think it was in the 1950s already. It was you got a bracha from our Rebbe. Chassidim in general in Russia weren't able to send letters to the Rebbe directly. They sent letters to Israel, to relatives, or to New York, to relatives, and they would write it in code. They would write, "Dear Grandfather." That was the Rebbe's code name, Dedushka, Grandfather. And they would write in code, like, for example, Dedushka, Grandfather, you're an expert in medicine. What do you think about the following cure for this thing? So anyway, so she said that she already has a bracha from the Rebbe, and therefore she doesn't need to have a bracha from anyone else. That's what she said. That's what was her feeling. So anyways, her husband goes to the shul, and the Ribnitzer Rebbe, at the end of his prayers, he would eat for the first time in the day, late at night, was the first time he would sit down to eat. And he's eating, and he says to Ramesha, Ramesha must have had divine inspirations to say the following statement, but this is what he said. He said, "Ramesha, you know, your wife doesn't need a blessing from me. Because she has a bracha from her Rebbe. But as a good friend, not as a Rebbe, but as a good friend, I want to give her my blessings and share with her my blessings that she should have a complete and speedy recovery. So he honored her wish not to have a bracha from another Rebbe, and yet he also was able to give his blessing as a good friend. This same Rav Moshe, he once was leading a Fabringen in Chernivtsi, and the discussion at the Fabringen circled around the idea of a Rebbe. The other people in the city of Chernivtsi who were not Chabad would also come to the Fabringen. You have to understand that it wasn't possible just to go to attend the Fabringen. You had to be, first of all, the Chassidim were afraid of Soviet spies that were eyeing them eyeing their remove. So they weren't able to just like gather together. They didn't know who was attending and if they were possibly informers to the KGB. But be it as it may, Ramichel Vyshetsky's and his brother, they would go around to the city and tell everyone secretly, there's a Fabringen the Shabbos, come, there's going to be a Kiddush Shabbos. And everyone would come secretly to wherever the Kiddush was. You weren't allowed to congregate in Soviet Russia. But that's what they do. They risk their lives in order to have that moment. And not only would Chabad Chassidim attend, even other Jews who were religious also want to be there together to strengthen each other. Anyways, so the Fabringen was circling around the idea of a Rebbe. So one of the non-Chabad attendants at this Fabringen, he said to Ramesha, by us, we don't use the word Rebbe that much. The word that we use is Guter Yid. Guter Yid means a good Jew. The way they refer to Tzaddikim was good Jew. So Ramesha said that this was his opinion. There are other opinions as well. I mean, I know that our Rebbein would use that word as well for Tzaddikim, a Guter Yid, a good Jew. But this is Ramesha's his vantage point. He said, now let me tell you, the word Guter Yid is actually an incorrect term. It's actually an insulting term. What does that mean, a good Jew? Isn't every Jew good? What does it mean, a good Jew? But anyways, he said, now let me tell you how that term developed. The original term, said Rav Moshe, was not a Guter Yid, not a good Jew, but a Okihiter Yid, a Jew who guarded himself. A Jew who guarded himself in his thoughts, in his words, in his actions. A Jew who is careful every moment to do the right thing. That's the meaning of a Guter Yid. Really, the word is a Upgehiter, a Gehiter Yid, a Jew who cares, careful. But because it got passed around and people missaid it, and that's how the term developed, Guter Yid. Really, the term is Upgehiter Yid, someone who may have desires to do the wrong thing, but is always doing the right thing. He's always saying and doing and thinking the right thing. Okay, so this Jew asked Ramesha, so that's the meaning of a Guter Yid, okay, but you're not using that term. In Poland, we use the term Guter Yid, but why you're using a different term? What term are you using? Using the term Rebbe, what does that mean? So Ramesha Vyshetsky said, let me explain to you the term Rebbe. He said that on our Rosh Hashanah, Hashem ordains for each person what's going to happen to them that year. And the decision is made Rosh Hashanah, but the Talmud tells us to pray every day and not to be sad, and even though Hashem decides Rosh Hashanah is going to happen to us throughout the year, but we still have to pray every day. Why do we need to pray every day if it's already been ordained Rosh Hashanah? So Ramesha said, because whatever has been ordained Rosh Hashanah, it's already been placed in some kind of storage house in heaven. But to draw down from the storage house, you need to be deserving that should come down in the world physically for whatever it was that you were... for whatever it was that you were destined to receive that year. So Hashem is not missing any angels. Hashem has plenty of angels. So the angels, if every Jew has in his storage house, his blessings he's meant to get. And the angel, he guides God's sustenance down from the storage house, so to speak, in heaven, into the world. So there is what is beyond the spiritual cosmos. There is what is beyond all the worlds. And then there is the worlds. And on Rosh Hashanah, there's a new light of Hashem that comes from beyond the spiritual cosmos and comes into the spiritual cosmos. Something comes from beyond all the worlds. Rosh Hashanah, when you blow the shofar, comes into the worlds. And then, throughout the year, you draw down from that, through your prayers and through your merits, you draw down from your storage house. So Ramesha said, so what if a person after Shoshana changes a little bit. When on Shoshana, we're all in the king's palace. We're all acting on a different level. We're all like, feel so close to the king, so close to the Hashem, so therefore we act in a much better way. But after Shoshana is over, we don't necessarily have the same kind of closeness with Hashem. And therefore, the angel is appointed to give us whatever it is that's been destined for Shosh Hashanah. He accuses us and says, you're not deserving of this sustenance that's been ordained for you. You've made this mistake and that mistake. This is meant for somebody else, not for you. So Rav Moshe said, but that's the power of a tzaddik, the power of a guter yid, the power of the upguter yid, the power of the person who's careful in his thoughts and his words and his actions. He's able to channel the divine sustenance and override the angel's accusation with his blessings. He gives a blessing to another Jew with his sanctity and with his merit. He is able to override the angel's blockage of the blessing and to cause a blessing to descend on in this world for the whatever it is the person needs. So when the person needs health, and the angel says he doesn't deserve it, comes the Gutri Yid, comes the Tzaddik, and channels down from what's there in heaven for this person. Okay. So guy says, okay, that's very interesting. But that's, you're saying is, at regular, what is a Rebbe? Ah, Rav Moshe says. A Rebbe is someone who is able to make Rosh Hashanah every single day. He's able to channel from the beyond the spiritual cosmos and bring it into the cosmos, even things which haven't been ordained Rosh Hashanah. Every day for the Rebbe is like Rosh Hashanah. That's what he said. On that note, a few stories. L'chaim. Heard these stories from Rab Itzik Revich, Rav Shul, to share them tonight that are Shal Shudas, amazing stories. Everyone shared many stories. I'll share a few that I heard from Itzik. Itzik said that his grandfather, Rafal Deber, wasn't well, and he was then a young boy in Crown Heights. He was spending some chastorah by the Rebbe, and his grandfather wanted someone to go to the Rebbe after some chastorah, and the Rebbe gave out every year after Simchas Torah, the Rebbe would give out wine from his holy cup and for a blessing. And his grandfather wasn't well, said to his grandson, I want you to go to the Rebbe and ask for a blessing. Now, Itzik wasn't so comfortable doing this. He didn't want to go and speak to the Rebbe and have to talk in front of the Rebbe. He's a little nervous about doing that. But his grandfather was a very strong, hey, Sasan, wow. The son of Simcha, he was a very strong stickler for what he thought was the right thing. He told his grandson, you are going to go to the Rebbe, and you are going to ask the Rebbe for a blessing for me. Okay? So his grandson went past the Rebbe, but as often happened to people, they just look in the Rebbe, they just freeze, and they forget everything. So he, as he's in front of the Rebbe, he realizes he doesn't know his grandfather's mother's name. So he starts saying to the Rebbe, I want a blessing for my grandfather, Rafal Dovber. And he stopped. And immediately, without missing a beat, the Rebbe continued the sentence, Ben Devorah Malka, the son of Devorah Malka. He said his grandfather's name, the Rebbe immediately said who his grandfather's mother was. His own grandson didn't know the name, but his grandson, the Rebbe said, Rafal Dovber Ben Devorah Malka should have a Rafuah Shleim. Story number one. Story number two, his sister, Tzipora, had seven questions she wanted to ask the Rebbe. So the way it worked was, is that you would write in a piece of paper all your questions, and the Rebbe would look at the paper, and you would speak in front of the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would look at the paper and tell you the response to your questions. She had seven questions she asked the Rebbe. She came to the Rebbe's room, she gave the Rebbe her paper, never responded. Among her questions was about who she should marry. She wanted to marry someone who was not Chabad. There'd been instructor that was a good idea. Anyways, and she had them answer all of her questions. And when she left the Rebbe's room, she looked in her pocket. She realized she gave the Rebbe a blank piece of paper. In her pocket, she had two pieces of paper. The paper with her questions and the paper that just one piece of paper. She had given the Rebbe the blank piece of paper and kept the questions in her pocket, and somehow with divine inspiration, the Rebbe answered all of her questions. His other sister, Devorah Malka, she had a lot of complications. She lost children in childbirth, unfortunately, Rahman al-Tzlan. Not once, not twice, but it happened a few times. And so the doctors told her that she's not allowed to have a child. She cannot have a child. It's dangerous for her. It's dangerous for the baby. So she cannot try to have a child. So she had, in the course of her medical history, accumulated hundreds and thousands of pages of opinions and facts and things of her record. She came to the Rebbe with like a telephone book size of records of all doctors examining her and their opinions about why she should not have any children. She gave this book to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe crossed out, just put an X in the whole book, like, don't worry about this. You're going to have, and the Rebbe blessed her, and Baruch Hashem, she had a healthy child, as the Rebbe blessed her. I'll tell you one more story. L'chaim, l'chaim. Rebbe Mendel Futifas, legendary chassid who did a hard time in Soviet Russia for teaching Torah underground. So he had a very close relationship with the Rebbe's emissary in Milan, Rebbe Gershom Mendel Gorelick. So it was one day, this boy, Rabbi Getzi Rosenfeld, who was with us at Shabbos, he shared the story, how his brother-in-law was in Kfar Chabad in Israel, and he met this legendary chassid Mendel Futifas, and he knew how he had a close relationship with Rebbe Gershom Mendel. Is there a Mendel? I want you to know I'm going to see Rebbe Gershom Mendel, and I want to care and I want to give him regards from you. So Rebbe Mendel said, when you give regards to somebody by Chassidim, don't just give regards. You share something. Said, okay, he's waiting. What would Rebbe Mendel like to share? So Mendel said the following. Rebbe Mendel said that shortly after the passing of the Rebbe Rashab, the two Chassidim met. And after they haven't seen each other for months, it was sort of a few months after the passing of Rashab, and they saw each other for the first time, they just sat down together without saying a word, and just cried and cried and cried together. That's what Rebbe Mendel said to share with Rebbe Gershom Mendel. So he went to Rebbe Gershom Mendel, and Rebbe Gershom Mendel had a moment alone, and he shared it with him. Rebbe Gershom Mendel said, thank you for the regards. When you see Rebbe Mendel next, you're going back to Israel, I want you to share with him the following. What's the following? Whoever is frightened, whoever is weak-hearted, should go back home. This is a verse in the Torah. The Torah says when the Jewish people go out to war, so before going out to war, the Kohen would announce the various people who were able to opt out of serving a battle. Among them, someone who got married, someone who had planted a vineyard, someone who built a home. And finally, someone who was afraid of the battle. When he was afraid of the battle, he was also allowed to go home. So Rebbe Gershom Mendel basically was sharing with Rebbe Mendel Futifas. Mendel Futifas was saying how hard it is. It's after Gemul Tammuz is difficult. And Gershom Mendel responded to Rebbe Mendel, yes, it is difficult. But nevertheless, this when the going gets tough, tough have to get going. Whoever is frightened has to go home. But if you're not frightened, you have to, we need you. You need you in the army, you need to serve. Parenthetically, the Kotzker Rebbe explained this verse. This verse, Rashi says, what does it mean, the one who's frightened, the one who is weak-hearted? Rashi says this means someone who has done a sin. He doesn't think he's deserving of God's protection because of the mistakes he's made. So therefore the Torah says, if you're afraid of your mistakes, go home. So Kotzker Rebbe said, if you think that God can't handle your mistakes, and you think that God's not going to help you because of your mistakes, then go home. But if you believe in God, and you believe that God's bigger than your mistakes, and God's going to help you anyways, despite your mistakes, then we need you. And we need you, and you need to show up, and you need to continue on in the battlefield. So that was a sentiment of Rebbe Mendel. Rebbe Mendel was expressing the pain at the time. And Gershom Mendel was expressing, yes, it's painful. But we need to show up. We need to do what's asking us. One more story. L'chaim. Okay. So on that note, Rebbe Mendel Futifas, when he was living in Soviet Russia, he lost unfortunately several children. I think he lost three children in Russia. And after he left Russia, he lost a daughter also. He really had a lot of pain, to the extent that after his imprisonment, Okay, two more stories. After his imprisonment, he wanted to go to Chernivtsi. He didn't want to go to a place where he might incriminate someone by his association with that person. Because the Soviets, they were watching Mendel with seven eyes. So wherever Mendel would go after his imprisonment, they were going to arrest that person too. The only person he could go to was Ramesh Vyshetsky, who was already in prison. So he went to Ramesh Vyshetsky's house in Chernivtsi. And when the Soviets asked him, why are you going to Chernivtsi? So he responded to them. He said, I want you to know that you've taken away from me a lot. He said, unfortunately, he lost his children. They're buried in Chernivtsi. He said, I'm not allowed to go see my wife. I can't leave Russia. His wife has already left Russia and gone to London. I can't see my live children. I can't see my son and my daughter. I can't see my wife. I'm at least going to spend time with my dead children. That's what he told them. When Mendel came to Chernivtsi, he was together with other Hasidim, Ramesh Vyshetsky and other Hasidim, and these Hasidim saw between two buildings, there was a little space between two buildings. And they thought this is a perfect place to build a sukkah. It was sukkahs. And they put some planks of wood between these two buildings, and it was a very small space, but it was enough. And the Hasidim gathered together in this sukkah that they created out of these few planks of wood. So they're for bringing, and the Mendel Futafah starts to cry. And the Chassidim, like, why is he crying? One of the Chassidim says to him, Ramesha says to him, why are you crying? Ramendel, Sukkot is called the time of our joy, time of our happiness. Why are you crying? So Mendel said, I'm missing my connection to the Rebbe. I'm missing my connection. I don't have the proper connection to the Rebbe. The other Chassidim, like, Ramendel, you're missing your connection to the Rebbe. If you're missing your connection to the Rebbe, then what about all of us? So Mendel said, you're making a mistake, he says. He says, what do you think? If someone has a huge gap in his connection to the Rebbe, you look at him as a weak chassid. If someone has a small gap in his connection to the Rebbe, you look at him as a stronger chassid. If someone's connection to the Rebbe is perfect, but it's just a tiny crack, a hair's breadth, he's missing his connection, you think he's a perfect chassid. Mendel says, but it's the opposite. It says in the laws of kosher, you have an animal, and the animal has a slightest, if a needle enters the membrane of the brain of the animal, even though it's a tiny, tiny hole, the hole of a needle, but nevertheless, in that sensitive organ, that's considered, the animal is not considered a healthy animal, and the animal is not kosher. And so too, the Mendel says, someone has a higher and deeper connection than ever, so then that is considered a much bigger issue. That means that's misa. That's not healthy. And if someone's on that level, so then that's not healthy. So anyways, Mendel, he was with the Hasidim there in Russia, and he was their source of encouragement. Parenthetically, Mendel, once on the way to a Faringen, he suddenly said, "I'm not going," and he turned away. And the guy who was taking him, Rabbi Vyshetsky, like, "Why aren't you going to Faringen? Everyone's waiting for you. Why don't you want to go to the Faringen?" He said, "I'm not going." He said, "Because when I go into the Faringen, everyone's going to stand up and they're going to honor me. You know how hard I have to work to take off all the schmutz, all the dirt from that feeling of honor and prestige? I have to work so hard to rid myself of all of that good feeling of pride that I'm going to have when everyone stands up for me." That was Mendel. So when Mendel's daughter passed away, years later, when he left Russia, came to London, his daughter passed away in a car accident. So Rav Mendel, he visited the Rebbe. One of his friends from Russia, Reb Heishke Dubravsky, saw Rav Mendel, and he didn't know what to say to Rav Mendel. He didn't know how to approach him. He felt so bad for him. He didn't want to say hello to him. So Rav Mendel called him over. He called over Reb Heishke, and he says, "Heishke, let me tell you something." He said, "There was once a captain of a ship who was serving in wartime. And he got some kind of a telegram on the ship that his wife got sick. And because he heard his wife was sick, although he kept doing his mission admirably on the ship, but it was half-hearted because he was really concerned about his wife's condition. So what happened is, as soon as the war was over and as soon as the ship was docked, he was arrested and he was court-martialed. Why was he court-martialed? He was court-martialed because, although he was in a lot of pain, nevertheless, he's a soldier. And a soldier has to do his duty. And so, too, Mendel was saying, Maybe it hurts. It hurts him that his daughter died. It hurts him after all that he's been through, that he still had to go through that suffering. And yet, the Mendel said, the mission is the mission. The mission is the mission. So we don't have to contend with these kinds of challenges, thank God, of being in Soviet Russia and trying to keep Torah mitzvahs under the watchful eyes of the KGB. We have to worry about other more petty concerns. But the bottom line is that it's not easy to be in the exile. You need to see the Rebbe, you need to see Mashiach, you need to have Mashiach come. And at the same time, it's not easy. You have to have the wherewithal and the strength and the good feeling to know that it's happening. This is the time of Mashiach. Today's the 28th of Sivan, the Rebbe arrived in America. And Hashem should help that we should arrive tonight to Yerushalayim, Erev Kodesh, with Mashiach. And just like we read today in this Torah about the spies, that the Torah says that God's not telling Moshe how to do it. He wants Moshe to figure it out. Even though you would think if Hashem didn't tell Moshe Rabbeinu, it must be a bad idea. But no, Hashem wanted Moshe to use his own initiative to figure out how to conquer the land of Israel. And so too, in each of us in our lives, in our mission in this world, Hashem wants us all to take initiative and to figure out, the mission is going to happen. The success is going to happen. Mashiach is going to come. The resurrection of the dead is going to happen. There won't be any sickness. How many suffering, that there's going to be abundance and no jealousy and no competition. It's going to be good. And yet, until Mashiach comes, there's a mission to be done. And we have to focus on the mission with strength and joy and confidence. And that's what we're going to make it until the coming of Mashiach. L'chaim, l'chaim, l'gut avach, l'afrei l'chavach.